So ADHD might be the most misunderstood neurodevelopmental disorder affecting kids, teens, and adults today. There are so many misconceptions about it, and in fact, the name ADHD is a terrible name for ADHD.
As vozes do professor.
Aswat al-muallimun.
Lausi ya wa'i.
Teachers' voices.
Welcome to Teachers' Voices, a podcast made from the stories of teachers from around the world talking in their own words. I'm your host, Nina Alonso. I'm an educational researcher and I talk to teachers and learning specialists about the issues they face and the creative solutions to tackle them. We live in a world full of distractions, and for some students, this can present a real barrier to learning and emotional well-being. Today's episode is all about attention and engagement in education, something that I'm sure all teachers and parents have experience of. Students who have difficulties with concentration, self-regulation, and task prioritization can be diagnosed with ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. ADHD is a form of neurodiversity. This is a term which describes natural human variation in the brain and behavior. Like many forms of neurodiversity, ADHD comes with both strengths and difficulties. And I've been speaking to three experts to learn more about this topic and how teachers can create the best conditions for their students to thrive. Dr. Melissa Dvorsky tells us about how distractibility impacts children's learning development and about the impact that the rise of digital education during the pandemic has had particularly on teens and students with ADHD. Then, Brian Diener, a social entrepreneur who has first-hand experience of what it means to grow and live with ADHD, will talk about how a tool he developed is helping teens learn to work independently at home on their academic work and manage digital distractions. Finally, Mike McLeod, a counselor and ADHD specialist, will share with us important practical advice that can help teachers create the kind of supportive learning environment that helps to strengthen the executive functions of youth who are currently struggling with developing them. Executive functions are mental processes that enable us to plan, focus attention, remember instructions, and juggle multiple tasks successfully. We first welcome Melissa Dvorsky. Dr. Dvorsky is an assistant professor at George Washington University. She's also the director of the ADHD and Learning Difficulties Program at Washington, D.C. Children's National Hospital, and I began by asking her how a child can be affected by attention issues.
Distractibility or attention regulation definitely impacts children's learning development in a variety of ways. So starting with just academics, first and foremost, when students are learning in the classroom, if they're distracted or having a difficulty sort of sustaining their attention while the teacher is talking, or even while they're reading, say, like a passage, these are all like blips in time where they're missing information. And oftentimes, this can lead to gaps in their general knowledge or ability to piece together information that's learned. And as a result, we see it takes much longer for them to do homework or to finish even classwork, and impacts their performance on tests as well, because they're having to do a lot of relearning or self-teaching or problem solving for the information that they've missed during these brief periods where they're distracted. And then on the social kind of emotional side, attention regulation also can impact behavior, both behavior in the classroom and being able to kind of stay seated and do the right thing in the right moment in the classroom, on the playground, with friends outside of school. This can look like being spacey in conversations or kind of getting distracted when your peer tells you something or reciprocating back to them. So they ask you a question and you talk about yourself, and then you're supposed to ask someone else something about them in response in a typical social interaction. And if a child's distracted, sometimes those social interactions can be impacted, not with everybody, but that's something that we can see and from time to time. And over time, this can lead to some individuals with attention difficulties being rejected from their peers or their peer group largely and having difficulty forming high quality friendships. And so it's really important that children that struggle with attention difficulties be engaged in different extracurricular activities where they can tap into their interest areas so they can meet other peers and other friends, form other friendships to help support their overall social emotional well-being.
Melissa has also conducted research into protective factors and resilience in the context of ADHD.
I'm glad you asked that because one area of my own research that I'm really passionate about is promotive and protective factors and resilience research in the context of attention difficulties and ADHD. And for example, like we find that individuals that have close friendships in elementary and middle school have better emotional well-being that protects against the development of depression or anxiety, and they're more engaged in their academics. We think this might be that by having pro-social friendships has a positive influence on children with attention difficulties, and it provides sort of a social model for being engaged, sort of like if you are studying together or if you're hanging out with a friend after school and they're doing schoolwork, then you're more likely to be engaged in schoolwork. They can also compensate for some of the difficulties or hardships that an individual with ADHD or attention difficulties, you know, might experience as a child, such as getting corrected by your teacher or getting in trouble with your parents or not finishing your work.
Talking to parents and teachers, I often hear how concerned they are about how digital distractions might interfere in their kids' ability to stay on task. Melissa has studied exactly this issue.
We saw a huge increase after the pandemic. Even when students returned to school, they're still often using devices in the classroom to help facilitate learning, which is sort of a blessing and a curse all together, as we know technology can be, because it helps to connect and reinforce the information by having it right in front of them. But it can also, when they're then surfing the web on other pages or they're pulling up other, they've got multiple tabs open that they're switching between, that can make it difficult. Those types of distractions can be really hard. I think at home, it can be helpful to have some monitoring of technology use. It can also help to have sort of just structured rules at home for when it's designated homework time. It's between these hours, and then screens for fun can be used in these other ways between these times of the evening or day. It can be challenging, though. Parents often aren't home during homework time, depending on their work schedule. If a child gets home before their parents do, particularly in middle school or high school, it can be hard. How do you make sure that those digital distractions aren't getting in the way when you're not really there in the moment to monitor? Is the TV off? Are the the tabs for YouTube and their social medias closed, or are they open? And it can be hard to really restrict those things as a parent. But what we could do is find tools that help either to kind of manually or automatically block those things and provide some positive reinforcement for when they do, actively work to reduce those distractions to help over time increase their internal motivation around doing those things. And so making that experience for them of turning off those digital distractions, make that a positive experience in a way that increases their interest and piques their interest and their motivation around doing that, but not expect that to just be inherently a goal of theirs. So tie it to something else external that either that they could work towards as a reward or giving positive praise or some other incentives. And yes, I clarify developed a great tool for this very problem of reducing digital distractions.
I wanted to find out more about Clarify, so let's meet its developer.
My name is Brian Dinner. In addition to growing up and living with ADHD, I'm the founder of Clarify. It's a toolkit for teens with ADHD doing distraction-filled online homework on the computer. We help students to crush their homework by staying focused and achieving their goals more independently. we've had the opportunity to work with Dr. Dvorsky, and she's done some really incredible research.
Clarify is really a wonderful tool for helping the child to actively reduce those distractions and reinforce in a positive way them staying on task. So I'll let Brian talk a little bit more about how it works.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dvorsky. And I think what we're talking about with Clarify is it does digitize and automate a lot of these intervention techniques that Dr. Dvorsky was talking about. So providing a way to put separation between yourself and the digital distractions. You know, this used to be a place in the library or the kitchen countertop where you would only do your homework and you wouldn't have your games around you. Today, instead, we have computers where you have your really tedious homework next to social media, your video games, all in one place. It's not a surprise that students are having struggles with distraction. So Clarify provides a tool for students to lock themselves out of the rest of their computer and only pick up one task, what we call a monotasking approach. And then it provides those rewards. So we've got gamification in there, but also external rewards that they do with their family so that there's an incentive for staying focused and they can remember in the moment why it's important to stay focused and strengthen their self-regulation. And then finally, we also include some chunking techniques. So it's chunking tools that help them break their assignments into more actionable parts, strengthens their working memory so that they can control their attention and work on what they'd hope to work on for short periods of time. Then we also include some other things like breaks, but we have accountability tools. So when Dr. Dvorsky talks about, you know, a teacher can't always be at home where the homework's getting done, this provides feedback tools. So you can see a little Jimmy worked for 2 hours on their writing assignment last night. And you know that they did that because they're blocked out from the rest of their assignment. And so it provides this positive reward and tools for students to really build their independence. So we really need to build solutions that help students and help people to build their ability to self-regulate.
The features of the Clarify tool that Brian just described can be really helpful to promote the ability of teens to work independently in their homework. Effective independent study helps build self-confidence and resilience for teens, and we will soon learn more about other interesting techniques that can help teachers of children at different ages to stay engaged in the classroom setting. But before we leave Brian and Melissa, let's listen to them talking more about digital distractions.
Dr. Dvorsky, could you share a little bit about how students have been impacted by the rise of digital education during the pandemic, particularly teens and students with ADHD?
Yeah, we actually collected some longitudinal data from a study that started well before the pandemic, and we followed these kids from middle school all throughout high school, and then the pandemic hit during their high school years, and so we were able to sort of follow them throughout that to see changes in their learning, their social emotional well-being, their attention while they were doing remote learning at home, and then when they transitioned back to school. And we have a few papers where we've looked at different outcomes and changes across this period. And in general, what we found was that students in this high school age, at least, really struggled with remote learning and doing schooling at home, and the sort of the change in disruption in routines and activities. We found that those who coped the best with moving from in school learning to remote learning at home were those whose families tried to maintain some sense of structure or routine around their days. And so that sort of flow of we always still wake up at this time, we eat meals at this time, and then we do this activity and then schoolwork for this period. Following that same sort of pattern or routine was very protective for children with attention difficulties.
The pandemic had some positive effects on children's well-being, mainly related to the fact that spending more quality time with family members strengthened family bonds. However, Melissa's research also acknowledged that remote learning negatively impacted young people's academic performance and some areas of social emotional well-being, including anxiety and depression.
we've learned in from our studies so far that kind of going back to in-person for learning has been helpful for a lot of youth and adolescents, and that the technology that was available to students for remote learning really was not designed for children with attention difficulties. It wasn't well organized to help them figure out what they needed to do. It wasn't engaging or, you know, reinforcing the right behaviors. And it sort of left a lot of these students that struggled worsened, and we saw some declines in their learning. So we're still in a lot of the families and schools that I work in now, still kind of recovering some of those, the impact of the pandemic, and trying to rebuild learning time that was lost, and also just social emotional development.
Thanks to Dr. Melissa Dubrowski for her insights. So far, we've talked about the needs and challenges for students with ADHD, and in a moment we'll go into more detail on the relationship between ADHD and executive function. But first, I'd like to focus on some of the strengths and opportunities that come with ADHD. Here is Brian Diener again.
There are a lot of skill sets that students and adults with ADHD have, such as being creative. You look at some great artists like Justin Timberlake, but you also look at some creative businessmen and women. Lots of founders with ADHD, because they really believe they can do something and they don't think about all the small, minuscule steps in between jumping in the journey and getting to success. And so we tell all our students that the ADHD comes with its challenges, but if you can come up with good coping mechanisms, it can augment the really great strengths that we have as well.
Thank you to Brian for that positive approach to thinking about ADHD. This brings me to the next point, which is how we think about ADHD, particularly around understanding how to help children in a learning environment. I'd like to introduce Mike Buckload. He's an executive functioning specialist who spoke to me from his private practice in Philadelphia. Mike works with students, teachers, and schools to better understand the role of executive function in relation to ADHD. And he began by explaining why it can be helpful to rethink some basic preconceptions and terminology regarding ADHD.
So ADHD might be the most misunderstood neurodevelopmental disorder affecting kids, teens, and adults today. There are so many misconceptions about it. And in fact, the name ADHD is a terrible name for ADHD. Yeah, so one important thing to remember about ADHD is what we now know about it is ADHD is not a disorder of attention. It's actually a disorder of performance due to difficulties with self-regulation. So what we're really talking about here is self-regulation deficit disorder, and that's due to a weakness in working memory. So working memory is the key deficit of ADHD and executive functions. And what is working memory? I refer to both facets of working memory as internal language. So internal language is both nonverbal and verbal working memory working together in harmony. So nonverbal working memory is the visual imagery system of the brain, which allows us to use our hindsight and our foresight to help us make healthy and positive choices in the moment. So we're re-imaging the past and learning from the past, and we're looking and forecasting into the future so we can plan, prioritize, and problem solve for what we see is coming. And then the verbal working memory is the self-talk system, the self-directed talk system. So this is the ability to have an internal dialogue and an internal conversation so you can coach yourself through tough things. So individuals with ADHD really have difficulty visualizing to themselves and talking to themselves, which causes a myriad of problems, most notably with self-regulation of emotions, self-motivation towards non-preferred tasks, challenging tasks, tasks that are not instantly gratifying.
I also asked Mike to explain what executive functions are.
So people think about executive functioning as time management and organization and all of these external tools that people use to be productive. But executive functions are really internal tools. So executive functions are self-regulation of emotions, self-motivation towards non-preferred tasks, self-evaluation, the ability to learn from past experiences and apply it to the present, and overall self-awareness. So executive functioning is the basis for all learning. You can't learn and retain information in your working memory without strong executive functions.
Mike shares advice for teachers to create a supportive learning environment.
Really, what teachers can do is create a visual, you know, take a picture of the student at their desk, sitting up, listening, attentive, participating, laminate that picture and tape it to their desk so they can see the picture and know what they're supposed to look like. So it's really great for kids to see a visual prompt and know what they're supposed to look like, what their body's supposed to look like. That's a great visual prompt to trigger nonverbal working memory. But for verbal working memory, we want kids to start to think about their thoughts. Where are your thoughts right now? What are your thoughts doing? What are you thinking about? What should your thoughts be on? I'm wondering what you're thinking about right now. I'm wondering what you're feeling. I'm wondering if you're a little upset, if you need some help, if you want to ask me a question. You know, using a lot of I'm wondering sentences of declarative language, of helping to externalize your thoughts as the teachers, and helping the students to build their own internal self-cue where they're able to recognize and perceive their environment and perceive their thoughts and recognize where their thoughts are right now and where their thoughts are supposed to be. That's really a very helpful tool for students to really remain on task and get back to the task on hand. So one really great thing for teachers to do is to really have the structure in the classroom. What teachers really should do is have a beginning and an end that is set and structured within all of their classroom sessions. So in the beginning of the lesson, in the beginning of the classroom, a really good thing to do is to have an open discussion where kids are looking into the future and making predictions about what this class is going to be like. Okay, so yesterday we discussed such and such. Okay, so what do you all think we'll discuss today? Ask the kids some open-ended questions that don't have a right or a wrong answer, where they're looking into the future, they're estimating, they're sensing themselves, they're making guesses, they're playing with their thoughts, they're using mental play and planning and prioritizing. Okay, so what do you think we'll learn about? What do you think are some things you'll enjoy? What are some things you think will be challenging? When do you think you might need some help? What are some things that could be fun today? Have them start to play with what's to come instead of just taking it minute by minute and approaching that class without knowing what's ahead. And then, take note of some of those predictions that your students make. And then at the very end of the class, review some of those predictions. See what came true. See what didn't come true. See what turned out better than predicted. See what didn't turn out as well. You know, be able to play with predictions and get kids in the habit of predicting their future so they know what to do now.
The advice and tips that Mike shares seem useful at different learning stages.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So this is something that could be used for all ages. Obviously, the younger kids are going to need some direction and further prompting and maybe some modeling and some help from other adults. You know, you can bring another adult into the classroom and have them model correct predictions and correct reviews. And you can do this all the way up until the final age group and really get them in the habit of planning ahead.
As teachers spend a lot of time assessing children, I was interested in knowing more about what type of assessment can be more effective to help students with ADHD thrive.
Teachers should definitely look into project-based learning. But when it comes to testing and grading, it's really great when teachers are able to think outside the box and think of different ways for kids to show mastery of content. And anytime we can give kids ownership and leadership over the creativity of helping them show what they know, doesn't necessarily have to be a multiple choice test. Does it have to be a typed up essay? How can we show in different creative ways mastery of content? Because that's what school and education is all about. Are kids becoming masters of what they're taught, of what they're educated about? Are they truly learning and retaining the information? So it's really always helpful for these kids with learning differences when teachers use their creativity to creatively show what they know and be able to display their mastery of performance in different ways.
In this season of Teachers' Voices, we are highlighting the relevance of weaving learning communities to help children thrive as they learn and develop. We conclude this episode with an important observation made by Mike that stresses the relevance of community engagement in education.
And really what we're seeing from the most recent research is executive functions are strengthened through interpersonal relationships and meaningful experiences. So what schools tend to do is rely very heavily on this lecture-listen model, where the teacher is lecturing, the students are expected to listen and take in the information, and then regurgitate that information onto a test or a quiz or a report. And that model really may not work for today's student that lives in a screen-based world and an instant gratification-based world. So finding ways to bring relationships and group work and project-based learning and community-based learning, you know, get your students out in the community, get them learning about nature, get them learning about internships and different careers and different jobs, have them, you know, learn about how people apply this information to their everyday lives. Utilize your communities, utilize your towns, utilize the leaders in your community, and try to break away from that lecture-listen model as much as possible.
The insights that Melissa, Brian, and Mike have shared with us today encourage teachers to put themselves in the heart and mind of the students. I think working with students with ADHD can make teachers think more creatively and within the mindset of a child. We will continue our exploration of this topic in our next episode, when I'll be talking to teachers from different parts of the world about how they work creatively with students who struggle to stay on task, helping them thrive in the classroom and beyond. ADHD, like many developmental disorders, has historically been viewed as specific. Now it is increasingly recognized that ADHD does not look the same in every child. Find links in the show notes to articles on Bold that explore the terminology around disorders, the limitations of categorizing students according to diagnosis, and less well-known behaviors associated with ADHD. Thank you for listening to Teachers' Voices, produced in partnership with Bold, the digital platform for learning and development. If you have enjoyed this episode, you can learn more about our guests on bold.expert and in the show notes. Subscribe to Teachers' Voices and you will know every time we publish a new episode. Stay tuned for the following episode and don't forget to follow us and engage with us in conversations, sending your feedback and suggestions by email at podcastteachersvoices@gmail.com or on social media. Let's keep on building learning communities while bridging research and practice.